And all boys and girls, New World Order and Truth are alike to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Welcome to the intelligence agents, the terrorists, and the thought criminals hiding out in various locations around this world. Because if you're listening to this broadcast, you are the resistance. Tonight has been a long, long night for the people in the Uber Kingdom. It seems that people have suddenly had enough and are going crazy all over the place, which makes one suspect that the government will use it as a pretext to institute copious quantities of more police state measures. So, to comment on my theory, my rash assumption, we're going to have some limey bastards on the show, as you do, as in cases with the Uber Kingdom, my very special and remarkably respectable guest is Albert Burgess, a former constable and all-round good police officer. He's the kind of police officers that should get medals and such like that. That's the kind of guy this guy is. So we're going to get his comments on the recent police activity and what he thinks about it in the UK. Albert, welcome to the program.
Hello there, Vincent.
Please give us your take. What is, in your understanding, what is the cause of all these riots? There was a shooting by the police,
I think at the moment the shooting by the police is being investigated, and initially the first report came out was that he had fired at an officer and that he had hit him and a bullet had lodged in his radio. But I believe the IPCC, which is the complainants body that investigates these shootings, has now come out and said that the bullet in the police officer's radio was a police bullet fired from a Heckler & Koch semi-automatic rifle. And the supposition is that they fired two shots, one of which is ricocheted, having gone through the man's arm, presumably, and has come back and bounced back and has hit the other officer. The fact remains that the guy himself, he had what they call a Brunei automatic. Now, a Brunei automatic is actually a blank-firing 8mm automatic. But this automatic had in fact been converted to fire bullets. They say that there was a shot in the magazine which had a bullet head in it, so it was capable of firing and it was loaded to fire. The police have fired two bullets, we know that. Witnesses have said that they've heard three or four shots in the area, we know that. So I think it's a safe bet to say that the guy has probably fired at the police officer. The Brunei, being a gun where they simply drill out the barrel, and it's not rifled as such, because they can't put the rifling in, it's not terribly accurate. So once the bullet leaves the barrel, it flies off anywhere it wants to go, really. But it's possible that he fired two shots at the police, or one or two shots at the police. The police responded with a Heckler & Koch. One of the bullets passed, we believe, through his arm, and the other, in fact, was the one that killed him. So I think that the way it's looking at the moment, it's looking at the moment to be a clean shoot from the police point of view. in that they were justified in firing. Certainly the man had a gun. There's been a lot made about the fact that he has a clean record. Well, if you're a policeman, that simply means that he hasn't been caught yet in a lot of cases. Because, you know, we catch people committing crime, and when you get them down the police station, there is no record. I've done this myself with a man who was committing sex acts in a car, which were offending people, offending ladies. We got him, I arrested him, took him down the police station, we name-checked him, and he had no previous record for it, but nevertheless, he was doing it, and I caught him doing it, so I arrested him. So basically, it's highly unlikely that that was going to be his first offence. So, from that point of view, I think the fact that he hasn't got a criminal record doesn't actually mean that he hasn't committed any crime. And the fact that he had a loaded firearm, which is capable of firing a bullet with him, would suggest to me that he was part of the criminal class anyway, because law-abiding people in England don't carry guns.
Is that because there's gun bans or because the licensing is expensive?
Well, it's because of the gun laws in the country. But basically, we don't actually see a reason for having guns. You know, I mean, as I was growing up in England, there was very, very little gun crime as I was growing up. I mean, you had the major gangs like the Crays and the Richardsons and people like that. They would use guns and things, although I think one of their executioners' favourite weapon was an axe. But, I mean, basically, they may well use guns, but it wasn't an everyday occurrence for the ordinary man in the street to carry a gun. And yet nowadays, I mean, like where I used to police in Harlesden in London, they are having a shooting approximately once every fortnight, sometimes more frequently. And what these are is there are black drug gangs out there in Harlesden who are selling drugs, and they are black on black shootings as one drug gang tries to kill off the other one. But most of the black people in Harlesden don't carry guns, and I would assume none of the white people carry them, because my experience has been that most of the ethnic minority people that I've had to police are actually quite nice when you got to know them. One of them introduced me to the joys of jerk pork, so I got, you know, which I quite enjoy.
Well, so I suppose every ethnicity kind of has its own flavour, doesn't it? The question for me becomes when it comes to rioting and general public disorder, is that there's this strange juxtaposition between the people who don't want their property to be damaged, who want the police to be sent in to protect their property, and the fact that as soon as you start sending large amount of police into the wrong situation, it escalates it.
Well, I didn't actually get much of that, but, I mean, basically...
I'll rephrase.
Go on, then.
There's the people who want the police to rush in and suppress the protesters to protect their property, and then, of course, there's the fact that when you send police in to disband protests, they get even more rowdy.
Well, no, I think all law-abiding people, whether they own property or not, want the police to rush out and protect and prevent the riots going on and to actually arrest these people, because, you know, there is no point in living in an area if you can't walk down your own street without getting bricks lobbed at you in your direction because, you know, there's a riot going on. Well, it doesn't matter whether you have property or whether you don't. No right-thinking individual wants a riot, and they do all want the police to prevent it.
Does that mean that the rioters themselves just aren't in their right minds at the moment? Or are they just the criminal element taking advantage of a situation?
I actually think that they're taking advantage of a situation. I mean, let me give you an example of something very similar which occurred. In my police station, they arrested a man, a West Indian man, for raping a West Indian woman. And the man, in fact, between the visits of the sergeant, because you get half-hour checks in the cells, 15 minutes if you're at risk, between the sergeant's visits to check the cells, he'd actually tore up his mattress cover and actually hung himself. Now, the police station was besieged by about 500 people who were protesting at the fact that the police had murdered this particular West Indian. I didn't actually hear any of them sort of worrying about the fact that this woman had been raped. I mean, she didn't even get a look in. They were just so intent on getting the police. There's a story that a lot of this riot is caused because a 16-year-old girl got smacked in the face by a police officer. My son, who was following this sort of the riots far more than I had been, told me that what actually happened was that she'd actually gone up to the policeman, all smiling and talking nicely, and he was chatting to her quite nicely, and then she took out a rock from behind her back and she threw it straight into his face. And I think another police officer just wanged her and put her down. So, you know, I mean, everybody tends to jump up and down and blame the police and say, well, the police are heavy-handed and the police are this and the police are that. Policemen don't like riots. They don't like them because in riots, policemen are the people who are actually getting hurt because they are the ones who are having the bricks and the petrol bombs thrown at them. And that's not an enjoyable situation to be in.
Oh, yeah. But there are some funny photos that come out of riots, though. You've got to admit, like the police medic with his giant baton beating people over the head. Oh, man. That's what a medic is being all about.
Well... Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen the photo, but I mean, basically, in a riot.
What about that other dude? It wasn't a riot per se. It was a G20 protest, I believe. He was kind of like had a backpack on. He was just kind of walking home through the protest after going to work, and he goes back to the police. And this one officer just suddenly, inextricably, for no reason, just comes out of the line of police and viciously smacks him on the back of the head with his club. And he winds up rupturing some kind of part of his head or something. And it turns out he later collapsed in the street and died.
You're talking about Mr. Tomlinson, aren't you? The officer for that, in fact, I believe has been arrested and charged with manslaughter. It wasn't the blow to the head that killed him. He'd previously been assaulted again by a police officer. We think the same one. who'd hit him who'd hit him in the stomach. Caused an injury to his stomach. Yeah, it caused him an internal injury, and it was the internal injury to his stomach that killed him. I think the officer has been arrested and he's been charged.
Well, the thing is, what's the name of this officer? Because that was the one thing I tried to find out. Is like, who the hell was this guy? Because they cover up their badge numbers and they don't talk to you. And this has happened plenty of times here in New Zealand as well, where the police make sure that their badge numbers don't show up. Yeah, ask them who they are, what their name is, what their address is, what their bank account number is. They say nothing. They just say nothing.
Can you hear me, you guy? Am I on the air now? Hello?
Here you are. Alan Carter, hello. Ladies and gentlemen, a fabulous limey bastard Englishman, if ever you saw one at the dog's bollocks.
Yeah. No, the G20 thing, even Albert agrees that was dodgy. It was just outward criminal thuggery. But it wasn't... it was the opposite to what we're talking about now, because what we can see, and I'm looking at it right now, actually, on Sky Television here, it's kicking off in Manchester right now at 11 GMT time. It's now kicking off in Manchester, so we've got another city that's involved with this copycat violence, basically, isn't it, Albert? Hello, Albert.
Yeah, hello there, Alan. Yeah, no, it's definitely copycat violence, and it's running up and down the country. the problem is that the police are not really...
It's unbelievable, Benny. It really is. We're watching it live on television as the whole of our beloved
country... Can I ask you something?
...is going up in flames.
Do you see the connection here between what's going on right now in England... with what happened back in Egypt when they started to overthrow Mubarak?
I personally do think there is some sort of connection. I don't know if Albert would agree with it. In Egypt, what I understand happened there was it was about grain and it was about bread. And that was taken away, and that's what, you know, it was literally the lack of bread that initially caused it. That was the trigger point. In Egypt, in Cairo, in the in that square, and then it was supposed to be a sort of CIA sort of quote color revolution, but it didn't quite work out that way. Even though they did get rid of the guy they were trying to get rid of, and that is the bloke that's in a cage right now, you know, on trial, Mubarak, whatever his name is.
And we'll be right back.
He jumped her. But you never know. You've got to have an open mind. I mean, I was listening to you, Vinny, with Alan and Steve the other day. And Alan was quoting what I told him and what I heard from somewhere else. The mind, I think I heard it from Jim Mars, actually. But the mind is like a parachute, you know. But,
and we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
The world we knew is gone. The conditions which framed and taught us our standards have gone. Our needs are now different, and our aims. The conditions which framed and taught us our standards. The world we knew is gone.
Looking it down in the Schwarzenegger sense of the verb, on the Vinny Eastwood Show, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. It's, the roof is on fire, and incidentally, so are the streets of London. Welcome back to my very special limey bastards, Alan Carner and Albert Burgess, and I say that with the deepest love and respect for the Uber Kingdom.
Have you noticed, Albert, you notice that he doesn't call you a limey bastard because you're a copper? You don't like bump him over the head with a big punch.
I don't know. I believed I used the plural limey bastards.
Oh, did you? Well, that's right, then.
I think you did, Vincent.
I didn't hear the sus bit.
But I've had that sort of language used at me with a lot less friendliness in the tone, I have to say.
Well, you know, you've got to take it back, you know.
Yeah.
I'm bastards, I'm taking it back, okay?
Yeah. Well,
I've been used in the derogatory for so long, and I think it's more of like a brotherly, like, I'm the little cultist.
They told me the training.
We are most, honoured to be on your show, Mr. Eastwood, and to be given the opportunity, as you are, as alternative media, to give people an honest view and a balanced view of hopefully, as it's going on now in real time. And I've got in front of me a screen, so like being in the White House here in a recording studio, and I've got all my screens up. I've also got a little wee telly.
Have you got the stage situation? Have you also got the stage situation room photo too?
Yeah, oh, no, we haven't organised that yet. We're waiting for Bill and Fern to get back from Portland.
Right.
We've got our family team over in America, haven't we, Albert?
Yeah.
They've been doing the Bilderbergers and all them. So they'll be back there, and we're doing a load of films over in England over here. But that'll be well away from all these riots and things like that. We'll be doing, you know, English Riviera Productions and Albert and UK Column and everyone else. We're doing some films in the autumn. But that's another story. That's another thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, on the subject of this, getting back onto the riots themselves, what do you think the government's response is going to be overall? Because in my opinion, they just use every crisis to hype up huge police state measures and more black uniforms, more tasers, more guns, et cetera, so that you've got basically paramilitary police.
Well, my own personal feeling, I mean, David Cameron has said today, I believe, that he will in fact... he has, in fact, told the police that they are to pull out all the stops, that they are authorised to use water cannons and live ammunition if they need it. And he's also talking about putting the army onto the streets. I think the police will resist all of that to a certain extent because they're not in the business, actually, of shooting their own people. They're not like the police on the continent. If you tell them to shoot, they will shoot. Our police tend to be a bit more restrained than that. And we have a tradition going back hundreds of years of policing by consent, which is a good way to do it. And the rights of the individual in the United Kingdom are greater than the rights of the state. Having said that, of course, you do have to deal with the riots. And if it were just one riot... like, for example, the Tottenham riot where they killed PC Blakelocks when I joined the police force as a result of that. They killed him in 1985. I joined in 1986 after I'd applied, after they killed him. That's one riot in one area. But I said at the time, and I've said consistently, that if people organise... and they carry out several different riots in different parts of London at the same time, the police would simply be overwhelmed and they wouldn't be able to deal with it because they do not have the manpower. Now, they're talking now about pulling all the policemen back out and putting them on the streets. All police leave has been cancelled. And so they can muster 16,000 policemen. Now, when I was policing, we actually had 28,000 policemen. And... obviously, a lot of those would be in desk jobs, but nevertheless, if push comes to shove, they can put a suit on and go out into the street and deal with crime. But basically, they just are not equipped to deal with mega riots in several different places. And it is when you get these mega riots in several different places that the police may well just decide that it's in the public interest that they might just want to shoot a few people. I mean, not want to, but feel it's necessary to, in order to restore law and order.
They weren't talking, surely not, the police, Albert. They weren't surely not talking about live... they were talking about what they call, quote, plastic bullets, yes. But at this stage, they're not talking about what happened to that geezer in the mini last Thursday.
See, what these people call... The problem is that what these people call non-lethal weaponry are, in fact, more correctly to be termed less lethal weaponry. You know, people still die from these bullets and stuff.
But
the greater public interest, I don't know. Because then you get into the whole argument of collectivism with me, and for me it's all about the individual kind of thing. You know, nobody's life is worth being thrown away. It doesn't matter what they're really doing right in the heat of the moment.
My personal feeling is you can get these replica guns like an AK-47 or an M16 assault rifle or whatever gun it is, which fire actually a .22 caliber shotgun cartridge. Now, they're actually used for killing rodents. They're just not up to killing a person. I actually feel there's a case for the police to use these and actually just fire them along at leg level, because everybody who gets hit with one of these things, it's going to hurt like hell, but B, it's not going to kill them, it's not going to do any serious damage to them, but they are all going to need to go to the hospital to get the thing removed, and of course that's when you can arrest them at your leisure.
There's all sorts of crowd control measures, and I wonder, at what point do you stop thinking about extra preparedness and crowd control measures and start thinking about keeping the people happy and taking care of them so that they don't get so upset and not crashing the economy and selling it out to foreign banks?
Well, I think the whole point here is I heard a young Afro-Caribbean lad being interviewed on the radio today about this. Now, he was one of the rioters. Not only did he not actually speak the language, I mean, his use of the English language was totally, completely, actually unacceptably bad. But he actually was reveling in the fact that this was his chance to go out and steal the things that he didn't have and he couldn't afford because he couldn't get a job. Well, I'm not surprised he can't get a job. He doesn't speak the language. And the man came across as being totally pig ignorant.
That's
what the media look for. They specifically look for the most ignorant, stupid person they can find.
Well, that's true. That's very probably true, yes.
I also heard two white girls, they were white girls in London, right, up in Hackney, Albert, being interviewed by the BBC. I could tell that they were white girls because of their accents, you know what I mean? But it was an audio thing by the BBC, it was played, and this was this morning, our time, and it was two girls, they were both 17, and they were being interviewed. 9 o'clock in the morning, they were drinking a bottle of rosé that had been nicked out of, obviously, a looted off-licence. Okay, and they were asked by the BBC reporter, okay, what do you think of all... They said, oh, it's a real laugh, isn't it? It's great, it's good fun, you know? And the reporter said, you're drinking wine, rosé wine, and where's that come from? Oh, it come out of an off-licence, some black geezer gave it to us. Yeah, you've been drinking all night? Yes, you have. And then, why are you attacking your own community? And they said, well, because they're rich people. And I'm quoting what these girls said.
Yeah. Because
the government is wrong, the police are wrong. And I'm only quoting them, Albert. You know how you know me, Nate. But this is
I understand that.
They're on TV this morning.
Albert, go ahead.
They ain't got a future. They're all rich. They're all to blame. The government's to blame. Cameron's an asshole. Blah blah blah, and I'm not going to swear on the air.
You're precisely correct. There's this foolish mentality out there of oversimplifying. You know, like if they're not with me, they must be against me. It's kind of a myopic left-wing socialist type thing. But anyway, Albert, you were saying?
Yeah, well, I was saying that. You know, I mean, these are just excuses, aren't they? I mean, I am not rich. I worked with my hands all my life. I'm a French polisher. I work on the tools. So I'm not rich, never have been and never will be. My daughter could have gone out and done nothing and been 17 and drunk and all the rest of it. She didn't. She studied at school, paid attention to her studies, got some very good GCSEs, went on to university where she got a law degree, and she's just got an LPC, which is a legal practice course under her belt with the University of Oxford Brookes. And she got distinctions across the board. So, I mean, there is actually no excuse for people to say, well, because I'm not rich, so I can't do it. My daughter isn't rich. My daughter's not rich. I mean, she's had to spend out for her LPC. She's had to borrow £10,000 to do it. And she's having to find a job now to pay that money back. But, I mean, she did it because it's what she wanted to do. There is no reason why either of those two 17-year-old girls couldn't do exactly the same. They don't do it because they can't be bothered to do it. And then they resort to the fact that they're saying, well, because they're rich and we're not, therefore that entitles us to
steal. I think we all agree. Albert, well, the most sensible thing I heard was that police officer. I think he was the deputy or the standing officer. Policeman.
Tim Godwin or whatever his name
is. Now, he come out in the morning and he, you know, come out in front of Scotland Yard and what have you, right? And he come out and he said the most sensible thing to the parents to get their children indoors.
Yeah.
And he knew what he was talking about. I think he's a policeman's, policeman, right?
Well, I'm hoping he is.
Well, do you know him? I don't know.
No, I don't know him, but I have just written to him.
That makes sense to me, because we knew there's a lot of teenagers were doing this. Who's inside? This is what Brian was saying earlier. Teenagers. Who's getting the teenagers to smash the shop windows and driving around in cars so the police can't keep up with them because they've got to keep trying to secure areas where there's fires going on, right? And who's driving around in cars? We saw it live on the television last night. There were cars driving around, stopping at places, letting out these people that started, you know, it was really strange. I've never seen anything. I remember the riots in the 19... And by the way, I knew Keith Blakelock personally in Muswell Hill. You know that, Albert. I told you that before. I personally knew Keith Blakelock, who was murdered in the Tottenham riots on the Broadwater Farm riots. I knew he was a lovely man, and he was a constable. He was a proper policeman of the old-fashioned sort of in that sense, you know. If there was ever a copper in my area where I grew up in London that should have been killed in a riot, it shouldn't have been Keith Blakelock, frankly.
Yeah.
There's plenty of other horrible coppers out there that I knew when I was growing up as a teenager, like these kids, you know? So,
can I ask you a question? Do you know the origin of the word copper? I think that's the Manhattan Police Force was the very first professional police force. When they first started up, the only thing that they could find was the cheapest thing that they could find to do their badges with was roofing copper. So everybody, because all their badges were made out of roofing copper, everybody came to know them as coppers.
Crikey, is that right, Albert?
Well, it probably is. I mean, I'm not up on American police law, but
I thought it had something to do. I thought it had something to do with Magna Carta or Henry something.
Henry II wouldn't have gone. The coppers came down and busted ye ass. You know, well, I'm not sure if that really
South Burgess territory here, because like you can talk about English history all night long, and we can talk about common law and all the rest of it and treason. You know, I think when Albert came on your show, did you go on the show, Albert? Yes, you did.
Treason. We're coming up to break right now, so you stay tuned there, ladies and gentlemen. My remarkable guests from the Uber Kingdom, Alan Carner and Albert Burgess, back in a moment on the Eastwood Show. Gentlemen, the show that you just can't freaking hide from. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Because we will find you. No matter where you are in the world, and we will infect you with our propaganda and our mind control. MK Ultra techniques. Just like my very special guests, Alan Garner and Albert Burgess, live from the Transylvanian Palace of the Uber Kingdom.
And we were talking over the breaks about self-defense and how who were you talking about? Was it your wife, Albert, who's
Well, my wife was a classroom assistant for special needs children. And these children were the older children. And she would come home covered in bruises, and I'd say, what happened to you? And she'd say, well, one of the 15-year-olds attacked me. And I'd say, well, what do you do? And she said, well, I grab a cushion, and I try and fend them off with a cushion. I said, well, why don't you just smack him in the mouth? And she said, well, we're not allowed to do that. I'll get the sack. But in fact, the law says that you can, in fact, use reasonable force to defend yourself. Now, you know, a 15-year-old special needs child is just as capable of killing you as a 28-year-old, is capable of killing you. So there is no discipline in the schools. And I said to her, well, you should just smack them in the mouth because pain is the best educator. And she came home a couple of days later and I said, how did you get on in school today? And she said, well, I've got this Down syndrome boy who's very... very close to me, you know, he follows me around everywhere, he likes me. And she said, this 16-year-old came over and started hitting me, and the Down syndrome boy came up, grabbed him in a neck lock, ran him across the room, punching him in the head all the time as you run him across the room, then threw him on the floor and kicked him. And I said, well, what did the 16-year-old do? And she said, well, he got up and he wasn't sat in the corner and he never moved out the corner all day. And it's, I said to her, I said, it's what? I've just told you all the time, pain is the best educator. So, you know, you are entitled to defend yourself. And yet we have today in England cases of teachers who are raped by school children, teachers who are assaulted by school children. There was a teacher in my wife's school, the head teacher, in fact, who was trying to break up a fight outside of his school between kids from his school and kids from another school, was actually stabbed to death. And there's a bit of a furor at the moment because this year the kid got out and he's got out early. And of course the head teacher's wife and family, of course, are going ballistic about it. But
you know what? You've touched on something here. Early discipline, like, if a child is starting to behave violently and they're not put straight instantly, so they correlate pain that they're inflicting on others with pain that they receive as a result, if they don't understand that earlier on, they'll wind up being like these girls who've, stealing rosé in the middle of the night, who don't give a flying F about anybody else or their community or family values or anything like that. And one thing that really seems to be important in this discussion, I believe, is that whole parenting aspect and the whole family unit, how it's kind of been broken down, and it facilitates this kind of despondent, apathetic youth culture that are basically just taking advantage of a situation because they've got the technology, they've got the Blackberries, they've got the Twitter, they've got the Facebook, and they wind up organizing these little places where they can go and have a frickin' ruckus somewhere just because everybody else is doing it. You know, latest craze. I mean, this is like the flash mob of UK rioting. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, have you ever seen the flash mob videos where a whole bunch of people just start dancing in a mall or something like that?
Yeah, but it's a combination of two things, isn't it? It's a question of A, they don't have any discipline, and B, well, three things. Their education ain't that great. And C, they sit there all day long and they play these computer games where somebody runs riot with a machine gun or a samurai sword and starts killing people left, right and centre. They get very desensitised. The films on the television can be very violent. So they get very desensitised.
But I think the point, Albert, is you think that those three things that you just mentioned there, with the video games being the last one, and the education being the one, the second one, and the first one, you know, what we've got is a total breakdown in society. We've got a generation of kids here. Of Xbox kids or whatever, Do you think that there's any sort of level of... I think what Vinny is sort of trying to figure out, like I am in my mind, is there a level of engineering here? And has that been written in documents like by the Communist Party, you know, in their manifesto? When you, if you want to ask that, answer that question, you ask Brian and they would say most definitely yes. And well, breaking down society is part of all of this.
Yeah, but I have to say that, you know, I don't always agree with Brian, but I certainly agree with him on that. I think if you look at what's going on, if you look at the New World Order manifesto, which is basically communist because the Ashkenazi Jews organized Karl Marx to invent communism, they in fact have this plan to actually destroy family life, to destroy... destroy morals.
They wrote it down, didn't they?
Yeah.
Don't you think this is all coming to light right here? And as I'm watching BBC with riots going on live here in Greater Manchester.
Yes,
running riots with policemen and youth. You know, and the same old thing that happened in the other
duties. Yeah, but I mean, but basically, you see, what they're doing, the New World Order Manifesto, is that you destroy the moral ethics of the country by actually removing religion from the people, because it's religion that gives you the moral base. So you remove religion, so we don't teach religion in schools anymore. So they've done that pretty thoroughly. You then make people feel discontented. You give them degrees which are complete rubbish. You know GCSEs and stuff which are rubbish.
Degree in origami.
And degrees as well. I mean, I've worked as a French polisher. I've been French polishing 40 odd years, and we would employ people in my company who have a master's degree in restoration. So you would think that they would actually have some idea of restoration, but they don't. The college that I had a little part-time job locking up in a college one night. I just go around with a big bunch of keys, lock up all the classrooms, make sure everybody was off the college site that shouldn't have been there.
They control the political system, they control the education system, they control the media, which is what they all set out to do, your New World Order agenda.
Yes.
Well, now that every kid spends like something like 6 or 8 hours in front of a TV, the media is the education system.
Well, yeah, but you see, this is the point, and it's been done nationally. I don't know.
Our country is being taken down.
So now that we have a one world government
right now,
already,
in real time.
It's a government of, by, and for a whole bunch of brainwashed frickin' zombies.
Well, yeah, but you see, the point is that this is a plan. It's taken a long time in coming. I read a very good report the other day on this. Not that it's my subject, it isn't, but somebody asked me to read it, and I did, because they're a friend of mine. And it's a very good report, and it explains how the Ashkenazi Jews, who were not actually real Jews, if you want a real Jew in England, then you don't go to the city of London and talk to a Jewish banker. What you do is you go to find yourself a Jewish tailor who's going to make you a suit, or a Jewish cabinet maker who's going to make you a piece of furniture. They're the real Jews. The Ashkenazi Jews are the ones who are into banking, like the Rothschilds.
They converted to Jews,
and all that lot. Now,
this is something you just need to clarify here, just for those who are unfamiliar. Ashkenazis are a tribe of Jews, just like Semitic Jews are a type, and Judaism itself is a religion, not a race.
It was actually
the Nazis who publicized racial identity with Judaism.
No, it's actually not true. The Ashkenazis are not a tribe of Jews. The Ashkenazis...
No, I'm saying that they're a tribe of Jews. There's no such thing as a tribe of Jews.
They converted.
They're a tribe of people, simple as that.
But basically, they started out, I think, in Kazakhstan, And they were between a Christian country and a Muslim country, and they were getting beaten up by both lots. So the king of the Ashkenazis actually turned around and said, well, if we were Jewish, they'd all want to borrow money off us, so they wouldn't beat us up. So that he then ordered the entire population to accept that, to turn to the Jewish religion. This they did. They then went to the steppes of Russia, and from there they spread out. And basically what they did, they got into banking.
Like a Jewish plague upon this earth.
No, they got into banking big time. And then they started lending money to government. But instead of having the gold to actually support the money that they were lending, the paper money they were lending, what they actually did was they just printed paper money with nothing to support it. They lent it in England to William III, who allowed them to open the Bank of England. They then printed money on the Bank of England paper. They lent it to William at an exorbitant rate of interest. And that's where our problems began, because up
and then... And we'll be right back with more problems, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, to the most smoking 2 hours in talk radio, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, coming at you partly live from London Bridge, which is burning down. Oh, the terrorism, the riotous, the opportunism, the fabulous thing. It's priceless. Kind of like the repair bill and the possible death and damage to property that might be caused as a result of so many English limey bastards just having a laugh in it. Welcome back to my very special guests, Alan Carner and Albert Burgess from the Uber Kingdom.
Hello there.
Guys, are you still there?
We are right, in the right. Heart of the evil archy, and Albert and I are, you know, we are well aware of control system that comes out of the City of London and all the globalist...
I mean, the evil archy I find gets its name because it gets up to a lot of evil malarkey as well. So it's the malarkey of the evil archy.
Oh, the evil malarkey. I like that, yeah.
Yeah. And that ties into the monarchy as well, the evil mono malarkey, like a monochromatic kind of robotic, some kind of test tube baby type lizard creature.
Well, Albert, I think, might have a different view on that, but, you know, what you've got is a... I don't know what's on the top of the pyramid exactly, but there's no question about it. It's a very ancient control system, as I call it, simply. And there's no doubt about that it's there. Some people call it the Illuminati. Some people call it the New World Order. Some people call it the lizards, you know, in the bathtub, like I do in my song. But, you know, it doesn't matter what you call it. There is this very powerful entity that's much higher up than government and police, for example. You know,
well, those are just the public PR fronts of these.
Albert's
kind of
experience in literally as a whistleblower. He's not really whistleblowing at all, but Albert's experience with on the ground with it is very balancing. And of course, you know, if we're going to move ahead as a alternative stroke new media, we have to be balanced in our reporting. Nobody trusts the mainstream media anymore. They've got to rely on us lot now, from now
can
on.
Can I ask you a question? Does that mean, because, can I ask you, because people don't trust anything the mainstream media says anymore, does that mean that they'll basically believe anything the alternative media says just because they're ticked off enough?
Well, I think the problem is that, certainly in England, in the 1970s, early 1970s, 70, 71, Edward Heath actually suborned the entire media of the country into helping him to commit treason. They did this by inviting the media along to breakfast meetings at the Connaught Hotel in London, which were attended by the top people in all of the national newspapers, BBC and ITV. And they explained to them there that they wanted a particular message put out. Now, the BBC actually balked at that, and they said they couldn't do that because of their licence. And then William Whitelaw was tasked, he was Lord President of the Council, which is the Privy Council, he was tasked actually with dealing with the BBC. Now, I don't know, but I suspect he threatened them with the loss of their licence if they didn't play ball. So the BBC came
handy off the air, maybe.
They actually came back on board again. And after that, everything that's been printed in the press, if it's to do with politics, is always slanted in favour of the government. Always. And the man who set up this system, Norman Ridaway, is on tape. He was interviewed for a Radio 4 programme. And he admitted to setting up the system. And he said, although they are no longer holding the breakfast meetings at the Connaught Hotel, the system is up and running, and it will keep running until such time as they have achieved their end, which is the total subservience of the United Kingdom to a greater Europe. So we fought two world wars, not counting the Napoleonic Wars and the early wars with our kings going into France, like Henry V and Edward III, and going into France and trashing them. We fought all of these wars in order that we could stay independent, and we won them. And a lot of good people have received some quite horrific injuries, both mental and physical, and in fact have paid the ultimate sacrifice and sacrificed their lives for their country. Now, our politicians decide that they know better. So the 635 politicians in Westminster decide they know better than the 60 million people in the country. And they've decided that they are going to sell this country down the line to a greater European Union, which is part of the New World Order plan. I think the plan is to have initially three sections set up of the community. There will be the European lot. Then there will be the American lot, which will be initially Canada, Mexico and the United States. And then there will be the third world lot, which will include China and India and all that lot. And then presumably later on they will have a war and they will wipe out the weakest one. And then they will just leave the two strongest. And then when one of them gets really, really strong, it'll take out the other one. And the object is to reduce the world's population from the, I'm not sure what it is now, 9 or 10 billion people.
Nearly 7.
To 500,000, 500 million people. So yep. they want to kill an awful lot of people because they see that the planet, in fact, will operate better if it has a population of around the 500,000 mark. But that means that they have actually got to kill billions of people. And this is all part of the plan.
Kill people is with poverty, really, and with the crashing of the global economy right now, I have no doubt that a lot of people are about to experience times that are so harsh that they won't survive it.
Yeah. But if you look at a lot of the third world countries where we have famine and all the rest of it, there is the technology available now to convert seawater to drinking water and to pipe it anywhere you want it to go. It just takes money. We gave a large amount of money to India recently in order that they can actually, either India or Pakistan, I'm not sure which at the moment, but in order that they could actually feed the starving part of their population. The Indian or Pakistanis, whichever one it was, I'm not sure which one, but whichever one it was, spent exactly the same amount of money, basically to the penny, on upgrading their military. Now, if we can afford to upgrade their military for them, then we can damn well afford to upgrade our own, not cut it to pieces, but to upgrade it. And, you know, I mean, all these things are definitions of treason. We can't feed our own population because we gave away, or Edward Heath gave away our fishing grounds. Ever since then, the European Union have been bringing in regulations which are making it impossible for our farmers to grow food. And farmers are killing themselves on a regular basis in this country, because they just don't know which way to turn. you know, I mean, I know a farmer in Wales who actually looks as though he's been carved out of a solid block of granite. And when he found out that DEFRA, which is the ministry people, were coming along to cull all of the cattle in the area, he phoned them up and he said to them, look, if you come onto my farm to kill my cattle, I will shoot you. And so the police came along, and they know damn well that if he says he'll shoot them, he'll shoot them. And the police came along, because they'd already tried to take his shotguns away and lost, and said to him, look, Watkin, they're not going to come along and they're not going to cull the cattle on your farm. They'll cull everybody else's cattle, but not the ones on your farm. Now, if there was a need to cull the cattle, a good scientific reason for killing the cattle, then it wouldn't make any difference whatsoever that Watkins' cattle were going to be protected by Watkin with a shotgun, because they'd just send a policeman with a machine gun, and if Watkin didn't put his shotgun down, they'd shoot him and kill his cattle anyway. But they didn't. They left Watkins' cattle alone. And farmers, in fact, have paid for post-mortems on cattle that are supposed to have foot and mouth disease. And of all of the cattle that they've paid for post-mortems on, not a single cattle has shown any signs of, cow has shown any signs of foot and mouth disease. This is
well, it's just a big, operation, you know. They sometimes release viruses or even hype up the false release of them so that they can destroy the cattle economy and various other things. And not to mention the fact that all of these problems wouldn't really be happening if the cattle farming practices weren't just basically all the cattle locked up and pugging around in their own crap all day. Like they do here in New Zealand very well. We've got very little disease. To a large extent, except for the ones that wind up getting pumped up full of antibiotics.
Yeah. I mean, I actually said to Watkin, I said, what you want to do, Watkin, is you want to have a call-out list. So if DEFRA come to your farm to do anything, then you phone one number on your phone, that person phones two, each of those people phone two, and everybody jumps in their tractors and drives around their Range Rovers and drives it round to your farm. And then you say to DEFRA, get off the farm. And if DEFRA say no, you say, look, you either get off your farm in your cars or we're going to bulldoze you into the ditch. And then you bulldoze DEFRA's cars into the ditch. I mean, I think it has reached the time now when law-abiding people have to say to government, enough is enough is enough. And they have to fight back against government, because there are only 635 members of parliament and there are 60 million people in this country. They do not the parliament do not represent anybody in this country other than our own politicians. That's the only people they represent are themselves. And they, if you go to your Member of Parliament and ask him to do something, your Member of Parliament will tell you he's not going to do it, because now he's your Member of Parliament, he can do what he damn well likes, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Just like a freaking Leninist, you know? Don't worry, comrade. I'm just telling them what they want to hear, so that when we have the power, we can do what we want.
That's not bad, you know. You sound like that, you know those that advert with the, I don't know, that Russian advert, probably an insurance or something, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I was incidentally an insurance salesman in Russia, rather, as you mentioned it. But
there you go. That's fine. But I mean, what information?
That never happened.
If you look at history and proper history, not history written by the bankers that rewrote it in their favour, you know, because they reckon they won, so the victor's always
right.
Yeah,
but if you look at a bit of proper history, Alan. If you look at, for example, at Abraham Lincoln, who was shot, wasn't he? Abraham Lincoln told the bankers they couldn't have a bank in his country, and they shot him. Kennedy was talking about actually taking over the Federal Reserve and getting rid of the bankers and making it a nationalised company and just printing money for which there was no interest chargeable, and they shot him.
Credit.
You know, the first Tsar in Russia refused to have a bank paid an Ashkenazi run bank in his country, and he was killed. Tsar Nicholas II was forced to abdicate his throne in order that, you know, the Bolsheviks could run the country. Having abdicated the throne, and he had said he wouldn't have an Ashkenazi-run bank in his country, him and his entire family were then murdered. So if you look down the line of these things, there is quite conclusive evidence, I think, that these people are not very nice people at all. And they are determined to get their own way at any cost, and if that means going out and killing people, then they're quite happy to do that.
Well, look what's going on now, man.
Well, I know. And
they're taking down our country. What are we going to do about it?
So
I'm sorry to I've got to go to the other show, guys. Yeah. So please stay on our.
Cheerio then. We'll continue on from here. Last words, Alan.
Good night.
Good night, Alan.
Good night, Alan. I'll speak to you tomorrow, Albert. We got
that. Okay.
Yeah. All right, mate. See you later.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Okay. There he goes. Yep. Alan Carr, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
where he goes. Yeah. Right. He's like Vegas. He's like Vegas. A lot of shows. Now, the question we really kind of wanted to get down to is what can the average person do? Now, I was wondering. This reminds me, and my girlfriend mentioned this, and I thought it was quite relevant to say, is that it reminds her of V for Vendetta, you know, how all the population sort of rising up against the government, that kind of thing. Bit of a psychological operation going on here, in a possibility faction, but here's the interesting part. One part of that that came to mind was when the police officer shot the child and the general people around the community came out with their shovels and their wrenches and whatever and took out the fingerman. Now, here's the question. Should the population that lives in that area take responsibility for its safety and pick up whatever they've got, brooms, hammers, it doesn't matter, and join the police lines?
In Wales, there was a police officer who was alleged...
We'll have to enter into this after the break. I'm sorry. You're listening to the Lee Eastwood Show at theeastwoodshow.com. Alcohol-soaked rag into the petrol tank of the New World Order and setting it on fire. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The lighter side of genocide, because the world's so full of madness and chaos and stuff getting blown up around you in the street. If you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. My special guest is still here with us, thankfully, honoured to be in his presence, quite frankly. Albert Burgess, welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking during the interval about what you do about it and whether people can make a difference. I'll give you an example of people making a difference, if I may. I grew up underneath a brothel and over the top of an illegal West Indian dance club. And up in the brothel, there was a young girl arrived. I say young girl, it's a young woman who arrived, by the name of Kathleen. Now, Kathleen was really, really nice. When I was about 16, I used to sit on the stairs. She was a lot older than I was. But I sit on the stairs, and she used to tell me about what she'd do as a young girl in Ireland, where she came from. Kathleen had been a psychiatric nurse, and she'd worked in a mental hospital, and there'd been a fight on a secure male ward, and Kathleen had thought that she'd hit the panic button to get some backup, but she went onto the ward to actually break up the fight, knowing, as she thought, that the cavalry would be right behind her. In point of fact, the cavalry didn't arrive for 45 minutes, and Kathleen had been repeatedly gang-raped by these male patients on the ward. It rather sent her, and she lost her desire to look after herself. She then ended up in the brothel, where she was raped again by the pimp for the brothel, and she had a child by him. Now, the madam for the brothel, who was past childbearing age, wanted the pimp's baby, couldn't have one, so she elected to steal Kathleen's. And what they did was they had Kathleen committed under an order for 14 days observation to a mental hospital. Mental hospital kept her for 14 days. They then let her out, and as soon as her feet touched the floor, they got her recommitted again. And it was a regular occurrence for several weeks to find Kathleen being carried kicking and screaming out of the house by police officers and ambulance staff as they took her away to be sectioned again. After this had gone on for a few weeks, all of the men in the street came out next time she was being carried out kicking and screaming, and they walked up to the police officers and they said, look, it's very fortuitous that we have an ambulance here, because if you don't leave the girl alone, then in point of fact, you're going to need it to take you to the hospital. and the policeman left the girl alone, and there was no attempt ever to actually section Kathleen again. Now, Kathleen, in fact, arranged for her sister to adopt the baby anyway, so the madam from the brothel didn't get it anyway. But, I mean, this was 40 or 50 men in the street coming out because they saw something going on which they knew was wrong, which they knew they didn't like, and they decided that they would deal with it. And they did. So, you know, you can actually make a difference. I in fact, have prevented the British government from repealing any male treason laws. Lord Goldsmith was asked by Tony Blair to repeal the treason laws. Goldsmith asked the Law Commission to look at the treason laws with a view to repealing them. So I emailed the Law Commission and I said to them, look, government can pass any laws they like to defend the Constitution and the sovereign of this country, but once they have passed them, they become constitutional in their own right and are themselves defended by the Constitution. Any attempt to repeal a treason law, in fact, weakens the protections around the sovereign and Constitution and places them at grave risk, and as such is an act of treason in its own right. Now, they emailed me back by return, and they said, of course, we don't repeal the treason laws, we only recommend the repeal. So I wrote back by return, and I said to them, if you recommend the repeal of a treason law, that in law is a conspiracy with others to remove the protections surrounding the sovereign and constitution of this country, and that is an act of treason. I and a number of colleagues of mine would be only too happy to walk into police stations and make the allegation that officers of the Law Commission are in fact conspiring with others to commit treason by removing the protections around the sovereign and the constitution. And I then went on to say, I don't know you. I am not sleeping with your sister. If you want to spend the rest of your natural life in prison, I don't care. You recommend the repeal of another treason law, and I am going to do my level best to see that's where you stay in prison for the rest of your life. And my level best is very, very good. Now, it took 3 weeks to come back from that. And after the 3 weeks, and you can guarantee they'd looked in every book they could think of and spoken to everybody worth talking to, they came back and they said, we have no plans to look at the treason laws. This was directly after Tony Blair had asked them to. One person can make a difference. And I can't reiterate that enough. One person can make a difference. But you have to be firm in what you're doing. You have to know what you are doing. And the people that you are dealing with have to know that you are simply not going to go away. That you're going to be there in their face all the time until you get what you want. And it's easier for them to give you what you want than it is to risk the alternative.
You know what? You're absolutely right. And this is what I find interesting about the way corporations and governments protect themselves from accountability, basically, is that they spread the load, right? There's no yeah. one person that can be held to account. It's usually yeah. some lower down person, or perhaps you might even eventually get an apology from a higher up person yeah. in public. And that's the best you can get. I mean, these people yeah. aren't going to go to jail. They're not going to get hung. They're not going to be decapitated in the public square or anything that they deserve like that for selling out the country and 100, yeah. 200 yeah. years of freedom sold out in a few generations progressively with these evil yeah. freaking scumbags working in collusion behind closed doors. I mean, yeah. get a grip, people. Bear in yeah. mind that the elections, the media, it's all a big freaking stage so that the people who've bought them all, sold them all, can wind up selling you out after buying you out for pennies on the freaking pound when they are crashing your economy, okay? These people are taking the long view of history. They're thinking things well in advance, okay? Yeah. They're playing chess, not checkers. Yeah. Yeah. And believe me, you are not the king. You are the pawn in this relationship, and you're only being told that you're the pawn. You can be the king. You can yeah. be integral to this yeah. fight yeah. against the New World Order. Everybody is capable of doing great damage.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I went up my local town, and my local town hall was flying the Union flag on one flagpole and the European flag on the other. I went into the town hall and I said to them, look, get that rag off of there. It has no right up there, so get it off. And the very next day, it was gone. I then noticed after a while that they were flying two Union flags, but they were only halfway up the flagpole and they were wrapped around the flagpoles in the wind. So I went back again and I said to them, look, this is the Union flag. It is the flag of our country. It must be pulled right the way up to the top of the flagpole, and it should not be allowed to wrap itself up round the thing like a piece of wrapping paper. And I came back the next day and I find that not only is it pulled up to the thing, they've actually pulled a little eyelet into the bottom half of the flag and they've tied it down with another piece of rope so that it can't wrap itself around the flagpole. So you can do it if you put your mind to it. It doesn't matter if it's a small thing like a flag or a big thing like treason. One person who is determined can, in fact, make a grave difference. But you have to be determined, and you have to know. Can I tell you a story about a friend of mine who changed the law of England?
Just before you do, I wanted to throw the phone lines open here because the situation going on down in England here is very, very important and poignant in the news right now. And we want to hear particularly from English listeners and perhaps anybody from over the world about what you think is really going on here. Or maybe you've got something else on your mind. The number is 402-237-2525, and we'll be taking your calls. So go ahead with your story there, Albert.
Yeah. Now, a friend of mine, every lunatic in this world is called Albert. And a friend of mine was a policeman. He took a call one night to a flat block of flats, and when he pressed the button for the lift door to open, there was a woman lying on the bottom of the lift, covered in blood, with a hammer stuck in the top of her head. And he said to her, "Look, don't worry, darling, I'm a police officer. The ambulance is on the way. You're going to be fine. Do you have any idea who did this to you?" And she said, "Yes, it was my husband, Albert." So they got her shot off to hospital and got her sorted out. And they went away and they arrested her husband, Albert. Now, when he went to the Old Bailey, it was at number one court, the Old Bailey, several months later, he was met by the Crown Prosecution Service barrister who said, "We're dropping the case." And he said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, the only witness we have to the assault is her. And because of the injuries to her head, she's lost her memory." So my friend said, "Look," he said, "can I give my evidence as a deathbed statement?" Now, I don't know if you know what they are, but a deathbed statement is you're supposed to go up to somebody and say, "Are you aware that you are dying and have you given up all hopes of survival?" And if they say yes, then in point of fact, you can use whatever they say as a deathbed statement. So the barrister said to him, "Well, did you say to her, you know, are you aware you're dying and have you given up all hopes of survival?" And he said, "Well, of course I didn't. My first aid training says I have to reassure the victim, not frighten them to death." So he said, "Well, you can't use it." So he said, "Well, I want to see the judge." So the clerk of the court was asked to go and see the judge, and the judge said he wasn't going to see the policeman. So my friend said to the clerk of the court, "Look," he said, "I'd like you to go back and I'd like you to tell the judge that he has two options here, both of which will involve him talking to me. The first is he can open the door and invite me in. The second is he can watch me kick the door off its hinges and go in. Either way, he is going to talk to me." So the judge invited him in, and the first things he said to him is, "Well, you better make this good, officer, because if you don't, you're out of a job tomorrow." So he said to him, "Look, I want to give my evidence as a deathbed statement." So the judge said to him, "Well, did you say to the lady, are you aware that you're dying and have you given up all hopes of survival?" He said, "Of course not. My first aid training says I have to reassure the victim, not frighten them to death. But I've been a police officer for 25 plus years, and I thought she was going to die. And by looking at her eyes, I thought she thought she was going to die." So the judge then sat there with his fingers on his chin on his fingers for 10 minutes and never said a word. He just sat there and sat there and sat there. And then he looked up and he said to him, "You've still got a job, officer. You can give your evidence as a deathbed statement." Now, he went into court, he gave his evidence as a deathbed statement. The man got 9 years for attempted murder. And on that day, my friend Andy changed the law of England. So you can do it if you put your mind to it. If you are determined enough to do it, you can do it.
Bear in mind, this is the difference between an activist and an employee. An activist is willing to lose everything in order to accomplish what they want. the employee is only willing to do so as long as they're collecting a paycheck.
And if it's not worth it, they won't do it. I think there are two types of police officers. I think there's the police officer who takes the oath and means it and will stick to it no matter what. And these police officers have the moral courage, if necessary, to go out and nick the chief constable of his police force, or to go out and arrest the prime minister and charge them with some, you know, something like treason or whatever.
And we'll be talking about this and more after the break, taking your calls 402-237-2525. That's 402-237-2525 at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com and AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Back in a moment, ladies and gentlemen. There in the United Kingdom, who are warming your hands to the bright lights of cars that are being torched. Welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the fingerless glove show of talk radio. We encourage looting, terrorism, and various other forms of government related activity.
Yeah, you speak for yourself.
I joke, of course.
Or am I?
Yeah. Well, you know, I suppose that there is one rule that you really must follow when it comes to resistance. If it's non-violent resistance that you aim for, namely, you don't want to have any people who are violently oppressed. And this is the kind of resistance that I feel gives everybody else who's been just talking about it a bad name, okay? The spreading of ideas may be dangerous and it may get people upset or whatever, but there's no absolute force that directs people to be violent. And I just basically have little concern for those people who really do want to get violent about it. You know, they like you said before, just give them a smack in the mouth to teach them that what they're doing is not the correct manner. You don't need to kill them. You don't need to arrest them, per se. Just frickin' heck, smack them. Send them on their way.
Mm. I had an elderly man on my beat. He was in his 70s, and he'd worked on the railways. He got hit by a train, and it took his leg off. And he was confined to a wheelchair. And one of the ladies on the estate came up to me one day and she said to me, "Oh, well, what are you going to do about old Harry?" I mean, it's not his name, but call him old Harry. And I said, "Well, what's the matter with him?" And she said, "Well, you know, he's crying. Why is he doing that?" And she said, "Well, he's young Nicky and his gang of tow rags. They're giving him a really hard time." So I said, "Okay, fine." So I'm walking around the beat, and I saw Nicky and about a dozen of his mates, and they started doing their normal, "Oh, Albert, Albert, Albert." And I walked over to Nicky, and I picked him up by the ear hole, and I walked him away, and I said, "Nicky, I'm fed up with you." And he said, "What's that?" I said, "Well, next time old Harry cries himself to sleep, I'm going to find you, and I'm going to knock 7 bells of stuff out of you." And he said, "Well, you'll get arrested then, won't you?" I said, "No, Nicky, you missed the point. If I had enough evidence to put you before a court, I would put you there. but I don't. And you'll know full well that it was me that kicked the living daylights out of you. But at the time, I'd have been playing. And just so that you make sure...
You would have been playing what?
Poker with 20 policemen in the canteen. And I said, just so you know I'm being serious here, I thumped him in the head. Now, old Harry had no more problems. Every night he slept normally. The group of tow rags never went anywhere near him again. And I think that it is undoubtedly true that, you know, if you put your hand onto a hot iron, you don't do it a second time, do you? Because pain is the best educator. And I think in a lot of cases, the problem with these people is they've never been disciplined. They've never had a smack. They've been brought up under Dr. Spock, child guidelines.
And guess they've got a new guideline legally restrain children from properly being disciplined.
Yeah, but Dr. Spock, who wrote this book on bringing up children, where, you know, if they throw their dinner on the floor, you have to give them another one. If they throw that on the floor, you give them another one. If you throw that on the floor, you give them another one. And you keep giving it to them until they get fed up throwing it on the floor. So, I mean, basically, I mean, if they throw it on the floor once, I said, that's fine. But, you know, that's it. You've got nothing else to eat today. You know, you don't just pander to them all the time. Now, only a couple of years ago, that after 30-odd years of Dr. Spock's child care methods being used as the Bible in bringing up children, Dr. Spock came out and said, I'm responsible for making 90% of the delinquents in the world, you know, by writing this book and everybody's following my book. So, you know, I mean...
Well, it sounds like a good old-fashioned brainwashing technique to me. You write a good, nice fable, and you publish it, and you get it out there, and have a whole bunch of reputable people sign their names to it, and suddenly everybody thinks it's the best thing since sliced heads, and they think it's a revolutionary idea, when the reality is that the only true revolutionary ideas have already been thought up and are only just now being reintroduced. Well, okay. In reality, Albert, you and I aren't anti-establishment at all. We're actually pro-establishment, just not naive enough to think that what we have currently qualifies as established.
Well, yeah, but you see, there's people, aren't there, that you can brainwash, and there are people that you can't. I mean,
apparently the CIA figured back in the day. If you're a cannabis user, you don't respond well to brainwashing.
No. You can't be brainwashed. But I suffered a lot of stress in my life. My doctor said, well, I'll tell you what, he said, go along and have a chat with a counsellor. So I said, well, I don't need to do any good. But he said, no, he said, go on, do it. He said, it'll be good. It'll relieve all your stress. So I went to this counsellor. Cost me 45 quid, a complete waste of money. And he sat... And brilliant sunshine.
He sat where, sorry?
He told me to imagine I was on a tropical island in brilliant sunshine in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and that I was walking down the hillside into a beautiful garden where there were beautiful, dark, dusky-skinned maidens tending the flowers and all the rest of it. And after the 45...
After the 45 minute session,
and he said to me, there you are, he said, do you feel any better? And I said to him, well, listen, let me tell you this, right? I've never wanted to go and live on a tropical island. I quite like it in England. I don't like sunshine. It gives me a headache. I am not into gardening one little bit. And frankly, if I'm going to...
You cut out there. We didn't hear what you said. You said, yeah. Frankly, you want to.
Well, he said that, you know, he asked me what I'd thought of it, and I said to him, well, actually, I think I'm completely the wrong one, because A, I've never wanted to live on a tropical island. B, I don't like the sunshine, it gives me a headache. C, I don't like gardening, so no point. If I'm going to go out and be interested in a woman, it's going to be somebody from my own race, not somewhere else. I paid him his 45 quid and I went on my way. And I've never, considered counselling at all, really, again. I've never considered it before my GP recommended it, and I've never considered it since.
Yeah, well, I think what really people need to understand about these riots and civil unrest everywhere is that there's a whole lot of underlying issues that don't get reported on that need to be discussed so that these issues can be brought forth in their entirety with a competent understanding, with workable solutions. So just a quick ramp up here. What should we really be thinking about if this kind of civil unrest starts coming to people's cities? I mean, what responsibilities do the average citizens and listeners really have? I mean, is it just passing on information to other people?
I actually think that what we need to do is we need to instill discipline in our children. We need to instill respect in our children for our other people and other people's property. I think you need to teach religion, because religion I think that when our children get older, I think they should do national service for 2 years, because that then puts it reinforces the discipline that they already have, and it makes them better people to come out into the real world and actually have to learn and work. Because you know, if you've got to jump around because the sergeant tells you to, then you jump around, you get used to jumping around, and that way you actually get.
Well, you kind of become your own boss to a certain extent, but that's what kind of trauma-based learning is all about. It's extremely effective, and it puts in these really deep core kind of values into you, and this could be whether it be, sleep deprivation during military boot camp training, where they come up at 4 o'clock in the morning banging trash cans with clubs and stuff like that, and getting you out of bed and keeping you up long into the night and then telling you to do calculus at some of these major training programs.
It's actually character building. And if you look at the people who are doing this rioting, they're not, whether they're black, green, white, or indifferent. I've seen quite a few white kids in it as well. I mean, the front page of the London page, the Metro, is a white bloke walking past his can of special brew and his face mask on, walking past a burning car.
it's chavscum.com, I believe, was the correct page. Unfortunately, we've got to go. We've got to go. Okay. I'll have to thank you very much for coming and sharing a good 2 hours with us here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. You can check out the archives, ladies and gentlemen, at AmericanFreedomRadio.com.